Welcome back to the Puma Podcast. I am Tori.
I am Puma.
Yeah. Yes, you are.
I am. I don't know if we're trying to be like super emphatic.
Well,
with that, I don't know. I am
Puma. You are. That is what. That is.
And you are Tori.
Yep.
Well, you know. All right. So we have a lot of fun with the podcast.
We do.
I'm sitting here looking at Tori's face, and sometimes it's hard for me not to giggle.
I've heard, and smile. I've heard that before. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it's good. Well, you know, honestly, part of the blessing of this podcast is I get to do this with my father, and it is fun because we talk a lot before and after, and it's such a blessing to be able to share what God is teaching us, and honestly, just our thoughts, and hopefully not just our thoughts, but hopefully God's thoughts about God's word.
The things that we talk about don't mean anything if it's just our thoughts.
Yeah.
I mean, if we're not helping you know, communicate what God is saying and what God is all about, then we're just a noise maker.
Yeah, we're just, Yeah, I agree. And honestly, with that too, this may be one of the reasons why I'm so excited about this series, because we're in our integrity series, and integrity calls us to the God-honoring thing regardless of the cost. And even if that's a podcast, right? We don't want this podcast to be a Tory-honoring thing or a Puma-honoring thing. If it is not God-honoring, then we don't want to do that. Yeah. And this series challenges me, and hopefully it challenges you too, to really ask yourself, am I a person of integrity? And in the context of a believer, am I someone who does the God-honoring thing regardless of the cost?
Yeah, that whole idea of integrity, and it's so important to define, right, define what we're talking about. You know, one of the verses that we kind of started with was Proverbs 11:3, which says, "The integrity of the upright guides them or leads them, but the unfaithful are destroyed by their duplicity or by their foolishness." And so the whole idea that integrity, doing what is right according to God, what is going to honor him, what he desires is right, leads us and guides us. Someone that is led by something else, a different agenda, a different purpose, will lead to foolishness and heartache and frustration and all the feelings that we feel in our world. I mean, our world is full of angst and anger and frustration and bitterness and fear and on and on and on and on and on. You know, so what's driving that? What's leading that? Everyone's making decisions based upon their own ideas, their own agendas. And, you know, this whole series of integrity and, you know, from Proverbs, this idea is that, you know, it is going to lead us or guide us to be a person of integrity, to do what is right. Yeah. Not right according to me, not right according to our government, not right according to our family, not right according to our friends, right according to God.
Yeah. Well, and that's, you know, that's a good question, I think, even for us. Like, when it comes to integrity, and I'll just say role models, right? Like, we all want to be someone of integrity, I think, right? But we also maybe have people that we respect, somebody we want to be like. I know for me, this might date me a little bit, even though I'm only like 29, but Chuck Norris, right?
Chuck Norris.
Yeah, I know. I asked my teens that and they have no idea. So sad. Like, who's Chuck Norris? Honestly, I should pray about that. But, you know, Chuck Norris is so cool. His roundhouse.
He doesn't do push-ups. He pushes the earth down.
Yeah, right. The Chuck Norris jokes. I just, dude, it'd be so cool to be Chuck Norris. And that's just like a funny example. I wanted to be someone like Chuck Norris because I valued Chuck Norris. And it hit me a while back, you know, what if one day I'm someone's role model? You know, what if someday someone looks, wow, you know, Tori, I just want to be like Tori. And it hit me that typically, and then I say this for most people, the person that you want to become, the people that you look up to and respect are almost always people of integrity. You know, nobody wants to be, you know, oh, I just want to be like Doubting Thomas, or I just want to be like Hitler. You know, our role models typically aren't people who lack integrity, but the people we respect, the people that we try to be like, are almost always people of integrity. And this story today, we're going to go and look at Daniel chapter 1 and kind of look at Daniel, how he began his story. What made Daniel, if he was a person of integrity? Where was the God-honoring thing, and how did he pursue that? What did he strive to be because of his love for God? So,
right. Well, let's dive in then, shall
let's
we?
Let's dive into that, yeah.
All right.
Chapter 1 of Daniel. Okay, Puma, so we are here in Daniel chapter 1, and you know, I love the book of Daniel. There's some confusing parts of Daniel, but so the stories, man, they just inspires me. I just love how Daniel, you know, just really, well, we'll read about it. But he just, I love his heart. And one of the few people in the Bible where there's really nothing bad to say about this character. And I believe because integrity marked his life. And as we mentioned before, right, integrity, our definition, right, is doing the God-honoring thing regardless of the cost, regardless of the consequences. We, person of integrity, is someone that honors God. And so we're going to look at Daniel chapter 1. And I'm going to give some context. There's the context I really think sells the heart of this story. And I know, Puma, feel free to jump in whenever. I'm just going to kind of go off a little bit on the context.
No, I'm enjoying listening. Yeah, enjoying listening, you know, to that. It's really good and encouraging for me. I mean, you know, the context, obviously, you know, this happened a long time ago, you know, probably, you know, 2,700 years ago, maybe. About a long time ago. And if anyone, you know, is familiar with, you know, kind of the storyline of the Bible, you had God who created Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Mm-hmm. And, you know, Jacob had 12 sons. Those 12 sons went down to Egypt over 400 plus years. They became a great nation. God led them out through Moses. They wandered 40 years in the wilderness. They get into the land of promise, which is the modern day Israel. Called the land of promise because God promised it, you know, 400 plus years earlier to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, to their descendants. And so they're in the land of promise. And so they, for, you know, several hundred years, you know, they're living here. And God always said, if you follow me and trust me and obey me, I will walk with you and you will always enjoy this land. But they disobeyed, and generation after generation disobeyed.
Classic.
After King David and his son Solomon, the nation split in two. So you had the northern part of Israel, which was named Israel, 10 tribes, and then the southern two tribes called Judah. And so it became two nations, and the, you know, the nation of Israel, every king after you know, Solomon for the northern kingdom, every king was evil.
Just evil, yeah.
Yep, and so God let the Syrians come in 722 and basically destroy them, deport them. But the southern two kingdoms had a few righteous kings, and so they lasted a little bit longer. But here we come to the time of Daniel.
Yeah.
And Daniel chapter 1, it, you know, it says that in the third year of the reign of Jehoiakim, king of Judah, Nebuchadnezzar, the king of Babylon, came to Jerusalem and besieged it. And verse 2 says, and the Lord delivered Jehoiakim, king of Judah, into the hand of Nebuchadnezzar, into his hand. And so what you have is God had promised and said, if you disobey, you're going to basically be punished. I'm not going to get rid of you, but I'm going to punish you. And so God let this foreign king, the king of Babylon, come into Jerusalem and to besiege it. And the situation that flows out of that is the story of Daniel, or the, you know, the account of Daniel.
Yeah. Well, and that's, thank you for that kind of an overview where we get, where we start the story, because that is such an important part, right? Nebuchadnezzar, Babylon, the powerhouse of the time. I mean, they...
Yeah, the world power.
Yeah, yep. Right. Yep. Yeah, they were known, and it's so interesting. This isn't in the book of Daniel, but just the context of Babylon. And Nebuchadnezzar is a well-known character throughout the history of many historical books. And it's, you know, honestly, I actually do like Nebuchadnezzar. He has a really cool turnaround later in Daniel, but he was known as being a merciless, evil, cruel person. In fact, one of the strategies that Babylon would do is when they would go into a town and take it over and conquer it, they didn't just like devastate it and pillage it. I mean, they would kill, you know, the soldiers and get rid of all the fighting men. But what they would do, and it's such a brilliant, evil thing, they would kind of annex that country, and they would make that country pay 50% of everything they make would go to Babylon. And on top of that, they would take every smart, every capable, every skilled person out of that country and make them slaves in Babylon.
Right. They would leave those uneducated, the people that were poor, the people that weren't super skilled, they leave them in the land. I mean, obviously, you need people in a land to occupy it, but you don't want people that are going to kind of rise up and rebel. So they take all the people that are the go-getters and the the movers and the shakers, the people that have connections, the people that have skills and intelligence. Yeah.
Right.
And they would deport them. Yep.
Which is so, I mean, so for example, this has helped me visualize it hypothetically, right? Suppose Canada was at war with America, right? And Canada was Babylon. I know it's a weird example, but suppose they come in and Canada like just totally beats us at war. And then Canada, before they go back to, you know, the North, they would take all of our doctors, all of our engineers, all of our surgeons, all of our, the best military minds in the world. And they took every smart person in America and left the common folk in the U.S. So now, not only does Canada have all the smart, intelligent people to work as slaves, but you take the minds and the strategic and the skillful people out of a country, it can never grow to its full potential. And you're also being taxed, 50% of everything you make.
So yeah, everywhere that they conquered people, this is what they would do.
Right.
And we know this just from our history, though. If you want to take over a land, you really need to get the youth, right? Mm-hmm. You got to take over the hearts and minds of the youth. And so that's also what they did. So they not only took the people that were already doing stuff, mm-hmm. but then they would specifically target the young people, those that were smart, intelligent, in connections, and they would bring them into their own land, and they would teach them all the ways and the literature and the wisdom of the land, and basically turn them into good Babylonians.
Yeah.
So they take the best of the best of the young people and really indoctrinate them.
Yeah, yeah, really, honestly. And honestly, it's so cool. So look at verse 4, right? You kind of see this. I guess maybe verse 3. So the king ordered Ashpenaz, and he was the chief of the Babylonian men, and he worked under the king, and he brought all of the royal people from Judah, all the nobility and the families, and brought them to be captives in Babylon. And then verse 4 is interesting. It says, and I guess king Nebuchadnezzar says, select only the strong, healthy, and good-looking men, right?
What the good-looking ones.
Yeah, right. Yeah. That's so interesting. But yeah, the best, the brightest, the most handsome, bring them as captives. And then it continues, make sure they are well-versed in every branch of learning and are gifted with knowledge and good judgment and are suited to serve in the royal palace. Now, I'm not Nebuchadnezzar, but if I were Daniel's dad, and Daniel's probably 15 years old, okay? He's probably a young teen. And I was like Daniel's dad, like, hey, you were being chosen, you were one of the smart ones to work, not in the coal mines, not in the fields where if you break a leg, they just leave you out to die. You're going to serve in the palace. Like if I were Daniel's dad, like, bro, don't mess this up. And it gets even better because in the palace, you had a full meal plan. Verse 5 says, the king assigned to those who were chosen a daily ration of food and wine from the own king's kitchen. They were to be trained for 3 years, and then if they passed, they would enter the royal service of the king. So again, Daniel, for being a captive, he kind of hit the gold mine. He's going to have a food meal plan, which, by the way, slaves didn't have that, and it would be the king's food. And so if I were Daniel's dad, like, bro, yeah, you're a captive, but bro, you got lucked out. You're one of the smart ones. You're going to work in the palace. You have a 3-year internship. Don't mess this up, right? Don't mess this up. And I think that's so key for what happens next. And I call them the Fab Four. But verse 6, right? It talks about 4 of the individuals who were the smart ones, the skilled ones, right? You have Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And they were chosen, right, from all the tribes of Judah. This is so fascinating, guys. Like this, in my mind, this is where the story takes a kind of a turn. Verse 8. So you have the 4, Daniel, and then the Babylonian names, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego, right? But these Fab 4, and they're chosen to serve under the king for 3 years. And then verse 8 happens, and it blows my mind, right? This is where integrity comes in. But Daniel was determined, made his resolve not to defile himself by eating the food and the wine given to them by the king. I don't know if that strikes you weird, but if you're a captive and a slave, you have 3 years to pass a test to serve the king, for as long as you live as a slave, why would you say no to this meal plan? I mean, to me, that's kind of bizarre. Why would, and again, the word defile, he made his resolve, right? The Hebrew there to purpose one's heart. Like Daniel was determined, made his resolve to not defile himself by eating food.
Well, the reason why Daniel is in the first place is because the nation defiled themselves before Yahweh.
Yeah.
They did not listen to what Yahweh had said. They adopted the gods of other nations. I mean, you read in Second Chronicles and Second Kings about Jehoiakim and just how the leaders of Israel, it says that they did evil in the eyes of the Lord, that they deliberately brought in other gods and worshiped other gods, even brought other gods into like the temple itself. Mm. I mean, just made a mockery of everything that Yahweh was about and basically defiled everything that Yahweh said was holy and right and good and just. And it was because of this, disobedience and really defiling themselves, because the nation of Israel was in a covenant relationship with God. mm-hmm. that Yahweh was their God and they were his people, and there was this love relationship, and Yahweh loved them, and yet they continued to defile themselves or made themselves unclean or unholy in this relationship with God. And so Daniel, I mean, he's a teenager, mm-hmm. but he is where he is because the nation of Israel defiled themselves before God.
The sin of others. Yeah.
Yeah. And so now he's in a situation, and now not only did the nation have a choice, but now he's faced with the same choice that the nation did. Yeah. Is he going to follow the ways of his leaders? Right. And where did it get them?
Yeah.
It got them, you know, exported from their own land.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and it's interesting too, because I wonder why would Daniel not want to eat this food, right? And I think you're right. It goes right back to his heart and his integrity for the things of God. Mm-hmm. You see, the food that was blessed by the Babylonians, and maybe you've heard this, right? Before you eat food, you say this prayer, right? Bless the food into our bodies. That's actually comes from the Babylonians. They actually, and even further back probably, because they believed the food they ate, if it was blessed by their God, they would grow healthy and strong. And so the part of the prayer is really worship to the gods. I'm going to eat this food, bless it into my bodies, make me strong. The God of the Babylonians, in terms of food, growth, and like the sun, was Marduk. And if you ate the food that was blessed by the Babylonian god Marduk, and you grew strong, wise, and healthy, well, they would say, oh, wow.
All praise to Marduk.
Yes, yeah, exactly.
Yes.
If you ate the food that was blessed by a Babylonian god, and you grew wise, smart, intelligent over those 3 years, who would they praise? Yahweh? No, they would praise Marduk.
Right.
But this is so cool because Daniel, he made up his mind. He purposed his heart. He made his resolve not to defile himself, not necessarily physically, but spiritually, to not eat the meat blessed by the gods of the Babylonians. In fact, look at verse 9. I love this. It says, now God had given Chief Ashpenaz to show favor and affection for Daniel. Even though Daniel had his heart set on serving the Lord honored that. And allowed the chief to show favor. And
see, that's the whole part of integrity, isn't it? Doing the God-honoring thing.
Yeah.
I mean, doing the God-honoring thing is doing the thing in relationship with God.
Mm-hmm.
And God is always involved in when we walk in integrity, we're walking with God. And God is always involved in that. And he's always doing things. Not that he's going to change circumstances for us to get us out of situations, but he's involved in our lives, and when we're walking with him in integrity, he is at work doing stuff.
Right.
And so I love that. It was God caused Ashpenaz to show favor to Daniel and to let Daniel change things and just see.
Well, and it's so interesting too, because one, God didn't have to, and there was no guarantee.
Right.
Daniel did not know that God would show favor to him. Daniel just knew it would be a breach of my integrity to do anything. And also, they're captives. There's a bunch of Israelites there. If I do something that makes them think, oh, wow, maybe Marduk is better than Yahweh. After all, we're captives. Maybe if Daniel and us grow physically because of this king's food, the choice food, the best of the best, maybe they're right. Maybe Marduk is the real God and Yahweh isn't. And so Daniel, because of his integrity, asked a question. He determined not to eat the food, but he asked the chief, Ashpenaz, a question. He goes, hey, I want to ask that me and my four friends, so he talks for the other three, or my three friends, he goes, can we just have water and vegetables?
Well, see, this is interesting too. Being a person of integrity doesn't mean you have to be a jerk.
Yeah, right.
Doesn't mean that you have to be disrespectful.
Correct.
Doesn't mean that you have to be arrogant.
Mm-hmm.
Having integrity doesn't mean that you are full of yourself.
Mm-hmm.
The person of integrity is just doing what's right.
Yeah, no, that's a great point. Yeah, he wasn't arrogant. He wasn't rude. Like, hey, Ashpenaz, God's on my side, and I know that you're wrong, so we demand. But he asks, and it's so interesting because Ashpenaz is like, hey, I can't do that because the king will literally have my head. That's not a figure of speech. If you guys are not healthier after these 3 years, you will... Nebuchadnezzar, who is known for slaughtering people, I mean, he was just, honestly a very cruel king.
Mm-hmm.
Ashpenaz, he will literally kill me.
Right. Very fear-based leading.
Yes. Right.
Yes.
And I love the wisdom of David. I love the wisdom of Daniel. This is going to be a problem. You know, where Daniel's like, hey, let's do a 10-day test, right? For 10 days, just test vegetables and water, which, by the way, Marduk was not the god of water and vegetables. Interesting. Daniel's like, yeah, test for 10 days. 10 days, see how we do. And sure enough, after 10 days, the Bible says that they looked better and healthier. And so, you know, the chief asked.
Now, how did they look better and healthier? That's a God thing.
Yeah, right.
That's a God thing. That's not a vegetable thing. This isn't a this isn't an endorsement of being vegan specifically.
Yeah, right, right, right.
This is just, again, it is what God is doing when one walks in right relationship with Him.
Yeah.
And Daniel resolved in his heart that even though as a nation they were being punished, he himself was going to resolve in his heart to do the right thing before God, regardless of the cost, regardless of the consequences. Mm-hmm. He was going to live a life of integrity in a foreign land.
Yeah. Well, just throw up a little psychology here. So there's this thing called the law of diminishing intent, which is basically in psychology. It basically says the law of diminishing intent means that when you have a devotion for something, it fades over time. It fades over a period of time unless it's your identity.
So are you saying we start things but never finish things?
Right. Well, yeah, that's exactly what I'm saying. Unless, here's the key, unless it's your identity.
Right.
They say if you identify something, it's not a one-time, two-time, three-time thing. If you identify as something or with someone, that supersedes the law of diminishing intent. And Daniel, again, he made his heart, he purposed his heart to honor his God, even as a captive, even in a foreign land, because he made his resolve. He made his, he purposed his heart to honor God, period.
Yep. He made a decision and he made it part of his heart. This is what, you know, Proverbs says, you know, to guard your heart, what you put in, make sure that what you put in doesn't leak out. And Daniel wanted to always remember this. I am where I am because we disobey God. And I don't want to ever forget that. And I want to live a life of integrity, a life of obedience, a life that honors the Lord, honors Yahweh.
Well, that was part of his identity. He is not just a Babylonian captive. He is a someone who has been blessed and who loves Yahweh no matter where he's
at. Well, and also interesting too, his identity wasn't in his intelligence or his nobility or in his good looks.
Right, right.
Even though that's why he was picked, right? Mm-hmm. That's not what he was holding on to. I mean, honestly, he could have ran with those things and been fairly successful in Babylon.
That's a great
point. If he went along with those things. And not that those things are bad. Those things aren't the most important. On the hierarchy priority, what was most important to Daniel in his heart was the relationship with Yahweh and doing what he wanted.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I love how the story concludes, just this one chapter, right? So after 3 years, 3 years of this, these four guys choose to not defile themselves, right? They chose to not give any praise to Marduk, the god of the Babylonian food, but instead chose to drink the water and have vegetables. And I love what it says, okay? Again, God blessed them. Verse 17, God gave these four men an unusual aptitude for understanding and in every aspect of wisdom and literature. And God gave Daniel the special ability to interpret, this is crazy, interpret the meanings and visions of dreams. Okay, so then fast forward to the end of 3 years, these four guys are interviewed by Nebuchadnezzar himself. And I love what it says. It says that when the king talked with them, verse 19, and no one impressed them as much as Daniel, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah. And so they entered the king's royal service. I marvel. I marvel that these guys, and let me back up because it's one thing for God to do a miracle, okay? God gave them wisdom and understanding, and Daniel had the ability to interpret dreams. That's cool. But what amazes me is that how this started. I mean, there was no guarantee that God would do this for them at the end of 3 years. There was no guarantee that God would even let Ashpenaz allow them to have water and vegetables. And yet, they chose, like you mentioned, Puma, that they chose to ask permission. And this is what I love about the integrity of these guys. By asking permission, Daniel and his three friends, the Fab Four, they placed themselves directly in the will of God. They weren't trying to control situations. Like I said, they didn't trust in their skill or wisdom, but they chose, you know, we believe in Yahweh, so we are going to trust him with the outcome. We're going to put our lives in the center of God's hands, not our own. And by asking a question, but by seeking, again, respectfully as a slave, that they risked the fact that, you know what, you go against the king's rule and for the food plan. One, that's stupid, but two, you know what, forget you, you're going to be killed. There was no guarantee they would even survive that question. But by sticking to their integrity, they place themselves in the hands of God rather than their own. And for me, it reminds me, wow, people of integrity, they trust God. They trust God and are willing to respectfully seek the honor of Yahweh rather than anything that might point others to a false God. And I don't know how many Israelites were taken. There was a lot.
Well, how many were taken. And we see that it's Daniel that asked for this request.
Yeah, it was Daniel.
But his other three friends apparently went along with him.
Yeah, they seem to be.
So when you walk in integrity, you know, you do influence others and help others walk in integrity along with you.
Yeah.
You know, because yeah, there were many other young Israelite men, but none of them are mentioned here.
Yeah.
How many of them said, I don't know. You know, I actually like meat. I don't know if I want to eat vegetables.
Right.
I mean, how bad can it be? I mean, you know, no one's going to know, right? I
right.
mean, no one's going to know. I'm just eating here. It's just a simple, small little thing. Mm. But see, again, integrity is not about how big or small the issue is. It's about the rightness of it, doing the right thing.
Yeah. Well, that's a great point, Puma, because like, what if Daniel's like, hey, I'll still have the meat and the wine, but I won't eat it. I'll privately give it to the dogs, or I'll privately dismiss of it. Because in his own heart, you know, I can still honor God, but just secretly not eat the food blessed by Marduk. But no, he didn't make it private. He did it publicly because that would be a breach of his integrity, right?
Right.
If he just passively, I'm going to obey God in the privacy of my own, you know, room, that wouldn't be integrity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. He's not flaunting it, but he's not hiding it.
Right.
He's just living it.
Yes.
And that's where we need to be.
Yeah. No, and that's, yeah. And I love how Daniel and his three friends, again, because they were open and honest about it, they placed their circumstance in the hands of God. And that's what people of integrity do. People of integrity care more about honoring God than honoring themselves, and they're willing to risk potentially death or potentially a demotion. Maybe you're not going to work in the coal mines. Maybe, you know, maybe they're going to be flagged as those four guys that are challenging the king's, you know, meal plan. But their love for God was greater than their fear, and their integrity, their relationship with Yahweh. Even as captives, they believed in Yahweh, and even though they were, you know, maybe Yahweh was gone because the Babylonians captured them. There was probably fear for the other Israelites. Maybe Marduk is the God I should worship because he's the one that has blessed us and he's the one that blessed them to take over our God, Yahweh, Israel, and Judah. People of integrity, make up their minds ahead of time.
Yep.
I will not bow the knee. I will do whatever it takes to honor my God no matter where I am. And I'm going to place my hand, my life in the hands of a God rather than try to control it.
Mm. Right. Well, what's a good AQ for today?
Yes. No, that's
give me a good AQ today. So we'll let you do the AQs here.
Sure. So, yeah. You know, I think a good AQ for us and really, you know, for me, and I'm preaching to myself, but a question, what might God do if you made your resolve to live with your hands open to God's control rather than closed? I mean, what might your life look like if you made your resolve to trust God? Not try to control the situation, not try to force your own way, but truly and humbly and with a trust and love for God, what would it look like if you just trusted God with your life and lived your hands open, not closed?
Yeah. And it reminds me of Proverbs 3:5-6, trust in the Lord with all your heart and lean not on your own understanding. In all your ways, acknowledge him, trust him, and he will direct your path and make them straight.
Yeah.
You know, and so that's what Daniel did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, with open hands, he trusted the word of God, trust of the heart of God, and history has shown how that worked out.
Yeah, and I just want to highlight one verse at the end of Daniel 1:21. So Daniel remained in the royal service until the first year of the reign of King Cyrus. Guys, that's 55 years later. Daniel, because of his integrity from the very beginning, he made his resolve, right? The very beginning, he saw King Nebuchadnezzar, he saw King Belshazzar, he saw King Darius, and King Cyrus. And for 55 plus years, he had the ear of the king by working in the royal palace. That's amazing. It's amazing what God can do when we choose to live with integrity. Regardless of the outcomes, when we trust him, look what God can do. That's awesome.
That is great.
So guys, if you have any questions or comments for us, please, as always, feel free to reach out to us at thepumapodcast@gmail.com. We'd love to hear from you guys. And thank you guys for joining us on this integrity series. We'll see you next week, Fridays at 10:10.
Yep. Bye-bye.
Bye.